The following podcast may contain spoilers, strong language, graphic violence, and nudity. Viewer discretion is advised.
Four guys and a movie. Four guys and a movie. Don and Brian Robbins, you're reviewing movies for the show. Four guys and a movie.
In a world where four dorks decided to make a podcast, you got the 4AM Podcast. Hello and welcome, everyone. Today we are reviewing Harry and the Hendersons from
1987.
Thank you. Wow, what do we say?
Our names!
Yeah, why don't we start off introducing ourselves?
I'm your host, Anthony.
And I'm Joe.
I'm Rob.
And I'm Brian.
So, Harry and the Hendersons. What is everyone's background with this movie? Rob?
I saw it a bunch of times when I was a kid. I don't really have any memories of it other than a couple of scenes.
Right.
I saw it as a kid, and I remember not a whole lot. Now I'm thinking about it, but I remember liking the movie a lot as a kid. Maybe it was the animatronics in the thing's face I liked a lot. So I like that now too. Like,
I'm pretty big fan of face animatronics.
Yeah, shut up, man.
I also saw it a lot as a kid, and I'm sure numerous times throughout life on TBS or something, but. Yeah, again, I enjoyed it as a kid. I liked the special effects, and I still do as well. It's cool creatures, it's always been my thing. And I didn't remember too much of it. Actually, I remembered a good deal, oddly enough. But, and Joe?
I couldn't give a crap about this movie when I was a kid. I remember several times coming across it and just straight up changing the channel after a minute or two. These really aren't my kinds of movies.
I'm not sure these were necessarily anyone's kinds of movies. These were the kind of things that we got dragged to as a kid, whether we enjoyed it or not.
It's not a TV show.
Yeah.
Well, but I mean, just this type. Some were definitely better than others, but a lot of these movies weren't necessarily... Some we definitely were like, we want to go see this. Others we were just taken to, and some we were just left at because they wanted to go do other things, and...
It made almost $30 million.
How much did it take to make?
I don't know that. But this is gross, $29.7 million.
Really? Over the lifespan of its...
Yeah.
Theater?
This is box office.
Well, if it got a TV show, it must have made a pretty good amount of money.
I'm guessing it did crazy good for, like, home sales, like VHS. That's my guess. Because I don't remember ever seeing it in the theater. I only remember seeing it, like, on TV.
Yeah, well, 87. Like, I was going to movies in 87. My family's boring.
All right.
The movie starts out with Predator Vision.
Yeah, Harry is Predator, first of all.
Yeah, he's played by the same actor.
Kevin Peter Hall.
Yeah.
Played Harry and Predator in both Predator movies.
And the monster from Monster in the Closet.
And the monster from Monster in the Closet.
Literally, if you look up this movie on IMDb, the spot for this actor that played Harry is just—it's just a picture of the Predator.
Yeah, like no longer with us.
Mm-hmm.
Very sad.
Oh,
very sad.
I'm sure he probably played a few other creatures throughout cinema history because he's a very big man.
Yeah, and then
he makes John Lithgow look tiny.
Yes, John Lithgow also in this movie, playing the part of Nick Cage.
Ha.
And then. The main... Well,
to be fair, Jonathan Lithgow is playing Jonathan Lithgow. He's just as crazy. Well, maybe not just as crazy, but...
Not Ash, but...
He was doing the Cage facial expressions, too, though.
I forgot how good of a crazy face John Lithgow actually has.
Yeah, John Lithgow is pretty known for that.
He has a really good one.
That's true.
He's more reined in as a person, but, like, his acting style is pretty crazy as well.
And then the main antagonist was I don't actually write down his actual name. David Suchet, who was Hercule Poirot on the Agatha Christie TV show. And I don't think any of you guys know this, but I know this because I've listened to it a bunch of times. He was Aslan in the BBC radio program of The Chronicles of Narnia.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know that.
If you listen to that, like, you will not know that that is that dude, because he sounds totally different.
20 points to whoever, the four of you out there that knows what the hell he's talking about.
We don't have four listeners.
Well, we do. They're all sitting at this table.
Oh, right? No. Yep, we got three listeners at the table.
He also made quite a career for himself playing bad Arab people is he was the bad guy in Executive Decision and Iron Eagle.
And a slew of other terrible, terrible movies.
Chappie!
I don't think he was
in that. Was the movie I always changed to channel when I was watching Iron Eagle. Be like, oh, Iron Eagle's on.
So with the families out on a camping trip, they're on their way home when John...
Hold on. Yeah. You gotta point out when the movie starts, the little kid kills a rabbit, and it's the best thing in the world for him.
Yeah.
Murders an animal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, this movie starts out with at least a good half of the family being bloodthirsty, basically.
Yeah, you find
out... Just the men.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just the men.
All the men. You find out what happens after Ghostbusters 2. Rick Moranis and Annie Potts actually have a child. They give it up for adoption, and John Lithgow takes it in.
Yeah, it really is this kid.
It basically, yeah, it is that.
Ernest? What,
Ernest, yeah.
Is the kid's name.
As was his performance.
Yeah.
I see what you did there.
That's adorable.
A little bloodthirsty nerd.
Yeah. and it was just a sad little nerdy kid actor who didn't really do much. But, he's proud of himself because he got to kill a rabbit that they're quickly trying to cook up for lunch. Before heading out.
You're trying to set the scene that the family, like the father likes to hunt, because it's manly, and that's what men do.
John Lithgow, the manliest
man you'll ever
see on the silver screen.
But on the way home, they keep passing the little cute animals and that kind of shit. Like, they pass an otter and like a baby bear.
They seriously pass like
mountain
everything.
Lion, a bear. They almost hit a deer.
It's a freaking zoo out there.
It really was. It's a petting zoo.
Country Bear Jamboree.
And not just like out there in the woods. I mean like literally like a foot away from this road at every turn. I've gone on park rides and things where you're supposed to see animals where you don't see as many animals as you do on this ride home.
On the way home, the wife is like, what'd she say?
The sun is blinding.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even know what she said.
Because she was making a point of saying how he... No, he was making a point of saying how it's not all about guns because he didn't bring his. And then...
Straight up lie
because they hit a giant woolly thing in the road. And he goes in the back and pulls his gun out.
Well, yeah, that's spurned on by a lot of talk of violence from this nerdy little kid who wanted to spank someone in baseball. Was that it?
I don't know. I did not listen to the baseball.
Well, he was
going to
make his sister launch. So there's all this talk of violence. Yeah, he says, I didn't bring my gun. This isn't about me. This isn't about my gun. I didn't bring my gun till he hits this large animal, and then immediately goes for his gun.
Wild throw rug suddenly appears, and they crash into it.
Bang!
He gets out to check to see if it's dead, which he presumes it is, and then it starts moving around.
No, he gets it on the car first.
Oh, right, he does get... They do drag it onto the car first.
Show exactly how he lifts it up there.
Tie it down to the roof of the car. They start driving away. Thing comes back to life.
Which was kind of key, because if I saw a big, giant, hairy, man-looking thing, I mean, I know...
You every day in the mirror.
I hate you so much. I know, the chance of getting famous might be... worth something, but I wouldn't want to bring that big dead animal back home with me. Fuck that.
Not only that, okay. It's not dead.
Well, they don't know that at the time. They think it's dead.
Yeah,
right,
it was dead.
But the process, like, you chose the process of them putting it on the car, and it looks like it would take hours.
Yeah.
They
to strap it to a rope to a tree and, like, make a pulley system. It would have taken hours. Like, it would have woken up.
Put him on car, launch him off car.
And it was like cartoon style, too.
Yeah. Yeah, like straight, like space balls, just launch them, like, 50 feet forward. I thought they hit them with the car again, but I guess they stop in time.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, they just slam on the brakes, send them flying a few feet face first into the ground.
Yeah, his face would have been, gone.
Yeah, and now they're like, okay, he must be dead.
Yeah, now he's dead.
Even though, like, clearly he doesn't know how to tell if this thing is alive or dead. So he fucking takes it home.
Why not?
Yeah,
I will argue, say what you will, but they probably shouldn't have done this the first time. You wouldn't want to take this thing home, but certainly by this point, no, just fuck it. Just drive away. Do not get out of that car. This thing might be dead this time. It might not. I don't know, but it's going to be pissed if it's not. Let's just leave.
He didn't respect the double tap.
Yeah. Here's where, like, I'm okay with that part. You get him on the car, that's fine. But, like, he just took him home. And just left them in the garage. Just like, fuck it, I'll deal with it tomorrow.
Like, he no.
He retired from putting him on the car.
It's a goddamn Sasquatch. Like, call somebody.
Goddamn Big Feet.
Yeah.
Even if it was dead, they've already established that the smell of this thing is horrible alive. Mm. You do not want to leave it in your garage just to sit there in the heat and for however long it might have stayed.
And it's going to poop if it's actually dead.
Everywhere. Well, that's how you know it wasn't dead, because yeah. It didn't, like, defecate everywhere.
Right, and it looks like, it looks from, you know, what we see from the movie that John Lithgow's character, like, does his own taxidermy. Is that fair?
Yeah.
So, like, he would know how to properly take care of these animals that he takes home.
Like, I mean, it looks like he's taken the lives of some animals before. Like,
a lot of animals.
Yeah, lot of animals. Like, you'd have some idea whether it was alive or dead.
There's, like, cougars and deer and foxes in his house.
And then not too distant future of this movie, we will see him just collecting a mound of dead animals strewn about his house.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we'll get into the furs murder subplot.
That's important because it helped establish that Harry has feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he wakes up in the middle of the night and he's like, yeah, this is a bad idea. I better go check on that.
Well, you hear something in the kitchen. He's like, what is this?
Mm-hmm. Well, he goes outside first and there's nothing there.
Like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, Sasquatch is off the car and he's just going on a friggin' rampage through his house.
Yeah, where he finds out that everything hurts. Like, everything Harry is doing is causing him pain and injury. He's banging his head. He's, like, breaking his hands. I don't even know what, but...
I'm tall. I understand his pain.
Yeah, just kind of generally smashing his way through the house like any large animal like that would.
Really good practical effects, though.
Really good.
Yeah.
Did a great job, and they still hold up just fine.
And I gotta say, I mean, I think when I saw this... You know, back in the 80s, I think I just assumed it was going to be another one of those generic where, like, the guy takes all these pratfalls and gets beaten up by the monster a few times, but the rest of his family loves it, so then he has to, like, learn to love it throughout the movie. But I'm glad they didn't go in that direction.
You thought that much in the 80s?
Maybe in the 90s, I don't
know. Okay,
alright. Like, I overanalyzed the hell out of movies when I was a kid.
Oh, wow. You were born for this show.
But no, I mean, they did a little bit of that in the very beginning, but it quickly kind of turned around. But they're chasing this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have this weird whatever going on through their house while Harry's checking things out.
Well, Harry starts, like, finding all the animals on the walls and things, all the trophies, mm-hmm. and he starts, like, flipping them out and burying them in the backyard.
He eats the, he eats Sarah's corsage.
He does eat the corsage. Wait, it's...
Girls in the 80s.
That was her okay, so she's 15 in the movie.
Not yet.
Really?
No, she got that for her birthday.
She said she'd been keeping it for 6 months or something like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I thought it was for her coming birthday. Never mind. Okay.
No, so why is she keeping this corsage?
I have no idea why she's doing it.
It was important to her.
She's going
to
try to keep it forever because her grandmother gave it to her for her 15th birthday.
For those of you that don't know what a corsage is, it's a flower in a Tupperware container.
That you usually give to a girl when you go to prom.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know what prom is.
It's a flower generally worn at some major event.
For those of you that
prom,
don't know what a prom is,
quinceañera.
We can't tell you.
We can't tell you. You don't know.
Something one of your lady friends, just Kitty, invites you to.
We don't know.
You don't know what a prom is, you don't have lady friends, let's face it. Anyway.
Hi, ladies.
So one thing I did notice about this is that they seem to live in, like, a normal house, like a normal person house.
That is another nice,
like,
little thing.
All these movie families have, like, crazy giant houses with, like, a million bedrooms and stuff. This house seemed, like, pretty normal sized.
Yeah.
Which I found refreshing.
Yeah. And it was nice to see, like, this is them living in a house that he could probably afford on the salary he's probably getting doing the job he's doing.
In the 80s.
In the 80s.
Middle class. Yeah. Middle class strong. A little stronger than them.
Although, it also, I guess, kind of explains why they didn't fix the house after Harry brought the shit out of it.
Well,
I mean, it was only a few days of time in the movie.
Yeah, he didn't have a lot of time.
Not arguing that.
But yeah, so we're, like, behind track right now. So, like, yeah, so, they haven't named Harry yet, but he finds all the dead animals and buries them. And everyone's watching him bury these animals because they're like, then they start to feel bad because he has, like, feelings and stuff.
Yeah, I think that was when John Lithgow was going to shoot him. and then he saw his face.
The
when he
true
found the dead mink.
Yeah, the true turning point was when he finds that the mink, and actually, you know, John Lithgow with the gun raised sees the sadness in his eyes, so he takes pity on him and doesn't shoot him. The family also feel bad as he's burying this thing in the backyard, giving it a proper burial.
And again, good props to the practical effects, because usually, like, in these movies, I don't give a damn about whatever the thing is that the family's taking in. I'm like, yeah, just shoot it. Just kill it. But, like, when I saw it there, I was like, yeah, that actually, I wouldn't want to shoot him.
Is it because he had normal-sized human being eyes instead of giant, ridiculous...
Not just that, just the whole face in general.
Well, that also goes to the point of, as I mentioned before, Rick Baker designed this costume, and he's
like everything
amazing.
He's amazing
at special effects, so no surprise, it's great. But he originally did intend to have contacts in until he saw Kevin something?
Hall.
Kevin Hall.
Kevin Peter Hall.
Kevin Peter Hall, how much emotion and everything he could express through his eyes, even with the suit on. So they decided to just leave them out. I think that was a good idea.
Yeah, they start to have feelings for this thing. Like, they realize it has its own emotions, and they start, like, treating it not like a monster.
Initially, they seem to kind of start treating it like a pet, I guess would be the best way.
This is where they teach you to say notes, Joe.
Before
then, they call the police.
Oh, yeah, that's
and he
right.
talks to Discount Joe Mantegna. And he makes the mistake of saying that Bigfoot's in his house, so the cop just totally doesn't believe him. And it's just like, you know, screw it.
Yeah.
You know. Why do they ever, in these kind of movies, go with that? Like, just, if you're calling the police, just be like, something or someone is in my house, send someone. Don't tell them it's Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they spend a lot of time this part of, in their house. Like, there are only, like, four sets in the whole movie, and most of the scenes are in this house. Think about it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's funny, actually, I just realized now that, like, later on when in the movie, when everyone starts seeing Bigfoot and everyone's going Bigfoot crazy, no one at the police station thought to come by and check out this place, like, the first person to call way before all this started. You know, maybe somehow it started there.
I mean, police work, come on.
Yeah.
Generally takes them quite a while to catch up on
Joe Montana can't be bothered with that.
Right, which means he probably should be fired for gross negligence.
Yeah, they don't do that. Yeah, now, this is when he runs away?
No. Okay. We meet Irene next.
Oh, that's right. The neighbor comes with...
has no point in this movie.
No, absolutely not.
Knows a neighbor.
Other than having a pool to comically throw things into every scene.
Even still, she was just the generic 80s nosy neighbor.
She was like a minor inconvenience they had to deal with a few times.
Yeah, it really wasn't even that big a deal. Yeah. I mean, it kind of... they play it off as a big problem when she first shows up. And then after that, she's just kind of an afterthought. Kind of like a little maybe comic relief.
I'm sure what she was supposed to be, but this is also what throws me off with and what maybe bring up them not preparing their house. It's a big deal not to let her in initially, A, because Harry's there, and because he knocked down the fridge, which is they have a whole discussion about. But later, she's clearly in the house after Harry has redecorated quite a bit. Mm-hmm. What was their excuse for all that?
Actually, at one point, Harry is pushing John Lithgow up through the floor.
Yeah.
Right in front of her.
Hmm.
And she just, I guess, couldn't look down.
No, well, I mean...
she was too busy trying to suck peanut butter off her finger.
Yeah. She did just, like, can I borrow your peanut butter? And just straight up just shoves her finger right in the peanut butter right in front of him.
Peanut butter and baker's yeast. Mm-hmm. I don't even want to know.
No,
she said it was a new diet.
It was a new diet, yeah. Oh, which also included Tabasco sauce and something else.
Yeah.
It's called the vomit diet.
Yeah.
It was big in 80s.
I had something awful to say, but I can't remember what.
It'll come back to you. It always
does. This is also where we meet the dog.
This involves her getting peanut butter with a lot of dogs.
No.
Introduced to the movie with, like, an awesome fail where it just launches in the house, just face first into the closed basement door. I think it just smells hairy or whatever.
Yes.
But, oh, it's just like a missile. It looks like someone just threw it, like Milo and Otis style, against the
Milo
door.
Milo and Otis.
That does bring up another kind of question. The Sasquatch is living with them. He obviously can't sit correctly. What are we doing with all this feces this thing is producing?
I don't know.
Did you not see them cleaning the pool at the end of that movie?
No, don't forget. No, we spent a lot of time in the house, but the time in the house was only a short amount of actual movie time because most of the movie, he's not even in the house.
Yeah.
He's running around outside, so he's probably shitting outside.
You think so?
Yeah.
All
right. Yeah, and he knows how to get in and out.
He's only in the actual house, like, movie time, like movie relative time for, like, a couple hours.
Yeah, well... Okay.
That, those scenes just...
Well, a lot of the movie is in the house. Yeah. A lot of it is just the family.
I do enjoy that we're, like, legit discussing this.
Well, everybody poops, you know?
That's true, everybody poops.
Even Bigfoot.
And that's when Sarah discovers Harry's gender.
I mean, in all fairness, Kevin Smith's problem with Jurassic Park was dinosaurs to handle buttholes.
What?
The original Jurassic Park, dinosaurs don't handle buttholes. And he's like, how are they going to the bathroom? He legit had a problem with that.
He should have at least had
Kevin Smith.
Yeah.
I understand that, but they didn't have buttholes? Did you check?
Really pull in for that dinosaur ass to mouth scene?
Yeah, it's Kevin Smith. That's what he loves.
He's an idiot.
Hold on. I know we're off subject here, but like, can you really easily spot the butthole
on either birds,
this is what snakes, I'm or crocodiles? If you were like, find the butthole, like, it would take me a minute. Like, I know generally where to look, but it's wouldn't not be like, there it is right there. You know?
It's not like there was a scene in the movie where a dinosaur directly sat on the camera. Like, they're running by you.
There was. They went under the legs and during the thing.
But they whipped by it. They weren't like, you know, hey, here's its butt, or look for the hole. Like,
can you spot it?
Nah.
But then there's like big piles of dinosaur dung in the movie, and like
which proves they have butthole somewhere.
Who's dinosaur dung?
It's probably a cloaca.
We'll tell you what, Kevin Smith can spend all of his money remastering his own version of Jurassic Park.
It'd just be two dinosaurs talking in front of the convenience store.
That's fine.
One of them would poop and
then
something.
They get poop on, and he can get kicked off of planes for not sitting in the seats. All right, so.
Okay, so there's a great like logic fail that comes up right now where the dog launches itself at Harry with like a really impressive jump that a cat would be hard pressed to make.
Yep.
And Harry like catches it in midair like he's gonna give it the choke slam.
I would like to point out at this point, this dog is jumping roughly height level, which would be about where John Lithgow's head is, which we determined he was 6'4".
Yeah, about that.
Yes.
That's fucking high.
That's a terrifying dog.
Yeah. Yeah.
Terrier
chicks. Oh,
yeah.
Damn.
So Harry catches it, and they realize that Harry has a real gentle heart, and, like, the dog's trying to bite him, and he's holding its mouth closed. And he clearly doesn't want to hurt it, and he just gives it back to, I think, the mother.
I don't know that he clearly doesn't want to hurt it. He looked like he was going to until she intervened.
She was showing him that she could like animals, too. She started petting it. He was like, oh, you all are kind of okay.
Yeah. This one's a lot.
But either way, the big fail is, like, at that point, they notice he has a cut on his knuckle. Like, oh, he's hurt. Like, you hit him with a fucking car.
Twice.
Yeah, and he launched him off the roof. Like, just now you think, oh, maybe he needs medical attention.
Not to mention that he punched his way through the wall, a couple doors.
Yeah. And the next scene is John Lithgow and his wife, Nancy. I think was her name? Nancy?
Yeah. So,
let's go with Nancy.
She's the mom from Christmas Story.
She was my hero right now, because she is making the most sense.
Oh, yeah.
You will hear throughout the entire film. She's saying, he doesn't belong here. This is not where he lives. This is not the proper environment. This is a bad idea. We need to take him back right now.
Before he takes our jobs.
Yeah. Sasquatch took her. Back to the man pile.
So they're going to take him back.
They lure him in the car with some McDonald's.
Some generic
fast food.
Which also points for not having terrible product placement.
It's true. Except for the Celeste pizza.
Yep. Mama Celeste was definitely there.
Diarrhea in a box.
We learned at this point too that Harry's a vegetarian. He does not want the quote unquote meat.
Yes.
Harry is a Presbyterian?
Pescatarian.
We don't know his religion.
Well, we might. Exactly. He was given those fake dead animals proper Christian burial.
That is true.
But,
that's totally what I meant.
So he
cut that out.
That's right. That's true. Yeah, he does. He eats fish.
Yeah, but he is not having this burger business, so he runs away and starts breaking and entering into houses.
No, no. To be fair, he's totally having this burger business because they give him a fish sandwich and they throw it with like the majority of whatever the hell they bought in the back of his car for him to get in. Yeah, fries and a shake, and which does work. But then he gets distracted because his kid is upset that they're taking Harry away. So once again, he just neglects Harry and to go inside and deal with his kid. Which, of course, then Harry finally says, screw it, I'm out.
He was having a dad moment with the kid.
Yeah. Oh, I understand.
Crying, and then Harry starts crying.
Yep.
And I'm not saying don't be a good father, but, like, you know, you might want to keep an eye out on the big creature that you just locked in your car. That's all I'm saying. Be like, you know,
tell someone else to watch.
Yeah, like your wife, your daughter, or somebody. Be like, let me know if he starts breaking out. Maybe try and calm him down.
Break out. He broke the car door.
Yeah,
right
he
off.
Smashed that car door off.
That door is ripped off like 100 times in this movie.
This is where he tries to track Harry through the neighborhood. First, yelling Harry, which he named him Harry after Harry already left.
Yep.
So no way Harry knows that's his name. So then he resorts to basically Chewbacca noises.
Yeah. That's what he does over and over again.
Meanwhile, this little kid is trying to send all of his animals back to the wilds.
He does that,
that's right, yeah.
Sitting there and crying at his dog, like, oh, little Bob, you gotta go back to the wild. Somebody needed to come and give this kid a wedgie, like, for real. Had it coming, needed it for his own good.
I gotta say, if you're at the point where the kid doesn't understand the difference between the dog and Bigfoot, he should not be handed a gun.
No, that's true.
America.
Yeah.
No, I understand.
As a fine
they
gun.
Should not be handed a gun.
America.
Hey, we also find out around this point that there's a hunter, Jacques Lafleur, is after Bigfoot.
Silly Frenchman. He does show up at the very beginning of the movie, very briefly.
Yeah.
Find some hair.
Yeah, and you find out that he's working kind of with this doctor that has, like, a Bigfoot museum.
Don Amici.
Don Amici. But then, you don't hear about him for a while.
For a while, yeah.
Yeah.
I think he finds their license plate, so he's, like, tracking them through the DMV.
Yes. Hunts them down, tries to ask them questions.
Keep us rolling, Joe.
Notes.
I'm running out. I stopped taking them after a little while. So...
Oh, no.
I don't know. He goes to a library and, runs into this woman with a terrible femme mullet.
Wow, awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesomely terrible. And he asks her where the books on Sasquatch are.
She legitimately looked like she had a dead animal on her head.
Yeah. And she tells him the children's book section.
I don't know.
Hold on. We have to take a break to track Brian's farts on the audio monitor.
We're not doing that.
Press on, we'll find him later.
Mm-hmm.
It's been you just have to fart directly into the microphone next time.
Not gonna lie, guys. I kind of stopped to keep track after this point.
All right, this is where we
where exactly do you... What's your last note? What's the last thing say?
Oh, well, I took some later on.
Coconut milk? What does it say?
It doesn't say coconut milk. No. All right. So after that, there's some scene where he's running around and he notices a woman boiling a chicken.
Oh,
and then turns around.
So, no, what we're missing is that that Jacques Lafleur dude, he uses their license plate at DMV to, like, track their house, so he shows up at their house.
Yeah, that's right, he pretends to be a Forest Service guy.
A Forest Service guy. Mm-hmm. Which is weird, because, like, he's one of the DMV, he's like, I need this person's address for some reason. She's like, just give me $10, here you go. Which, I hope that isn't how it works for real, but...
Well, that's how bounty hunters do it.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, we find out at this point that Harry works at a gun store, because you see Lafleur is buying...
Not Harry.
Or, I'm sorry, George works at a gun store.
I wish Harry worked at
the
gun store.
If there were a sequel, Harry would be working at the gun store.
If that's what the TV show's about, I'm in.
Mm-hmm. It's like Orvis. I don't know if anyone knows what Orvis is, that sporting goods store. It's like fishing reels and guns and that kind of shit.
But, we see Lafleur is buying some high-caliber ammunition to go hunt down Harry with. I think it's also where we learn, like, a kind of pointless subplot in this movie, where we see that there's some acceptance issues with George and his father.
Oh, daddy issues start, yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't really go anywhere. It doesn't even get resolved.
But it makes sense, because he's the reason why he's trying to force the gun stuff onto his son.
Yeah.
That's what his dad did to him, even though he wants to draw.
Mm-hmm.
He's the artist.
Yeah, but his son is all about guns, though.
Well, yeah.
Well, yeah, but is it
because... So he's going to force his child to draw.
How much is his son into guns? Because that's, again, why I mentioned the bloodthirsty nature in the beginning, because by the end of this movie, the kid's crying every time, you know, Harry takes three steps away from him or whatever.
You know, kid's 9 years old and a foot and a half tall. I mean, he's got problems.
He's 2 feet tall.
He's a preemie baby.
So basically, at this point, Bigfoot fever is starting to grip the town. A lot of people have seen Sasquatch.
Everybody's seen them now.
Everyone's going to buy guns. Everyone wants to go shoot them.
Out, kids, hide one.
Yeah. And when the fever is at its pitch, that's when George's dad asks him to draw a giant Bigfoot sign. Mm-hmm.
Wants to become Bigfoot HQ at the gun store.
Yeah.
Bigfoot Central.
Mm-hmm. Wants to be a one-stop shop for Bigfoot killing.
So George draws it, and he makes them all, like, kind and all friendly the way he knows them.
Yeah, he tries to draw him angry and fails.
Yeah. So his dad changes the sign and draws over it and makes it all vicious looking. And then George has like a moment where he freaks out. He's like, that's not how he is. It means something to me. And he quits his job and runs out.
Storming off to find Harry.
It's funny because the picture did look like Harry was supposed to have like a little snifter of wine in his hand. He's like,
And here's where he does sort of turn into Nick Cage and just starts making a good, like, barrage of crazy faces at everybody.
Yeah, he does have a cage out.
Has that nice moment where they're interviewing a man, a bicyclist, who crashed his bike because he saw Bigfoot, and he just kind of, like, disappears out of the scene and then slinks his way into the crowd and pops up like some kind of, I don't even know, some weird snake. Kind of
Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, or a Nicolas Cage. And then just, yeah, berates this poor, well, this stupid bicyclist until he admits that the Bigfoot wasn't big and scary and didn't throw him around, but in fact he just scared the crap out of him and Bigfoot went running. The guy accidentally hit his bike into the stop sign.
This is kind of the point in the movie where it just starts, like, having scenes that don't need to be there.
A lot of scenes.
Like everyone buying guns.
Yeah, it's everybody buying guns. It's like people, just all these Bigfoot sightings.
Each plot about the rich guy in a nice neighborhood who becomes Rambo and gets arrested.
Yeah, it's just this guy with a toupee on who just really wants a ton of weapons. And that's where I kind of just started like tapering off, you know, attention-wise.
Well, that was a weird scene where, like, because everyone's like hunting Harry through the city. And he's running from the George is running from the cops. He ducks behind a garbage can, and the cops tell him to get out. And that's where they find fake Rambo. But not only was fake Rambo behind there, but we find LaFleur is also somehow in that same spot.
Yeah, there.
Is it when we have the garbage truck scene?
Yeah, garbage truck scene. So LaFleur is hiding in. Is he in the garbage truck?
Harry's originally in the garbage truck looking for food.
Yeah, Harry's
LaFleur. Discovers that he's there by tracking his mess he's left behind.
Okay.
And climbs up to the dumpster where Harry is. Harry spots him and pulls him in.
Yeah. So, at this point, George finds them both.
Yeah, this is the weirdest just group of scenes.
Steals the garbage truck.
Just running. It was just on.
And drives off. Where does he even go? Does he go back home?
No, he tries to get away, but he almost hits a homeless person. Okay. And ends up, again, launching Harry straight off the front of a vehicle.
Right, okay.
With the hunter.
Yeah, all the while, Harry is having a fight with this hunter in the vehicle, because the hunter is trying to pull a gun on him. Harry knocks it out of his hands. They struggle. Harry picks up the gun.
Yeah.
The hunter's trying to get it, while Harry's just absentmindedly pointing it at his own face.
So he's, yeah.
So they get launched.
Harry escapes. He gets knocked out, LaFleur. Harry escapes. George escapes. LaFleur gets arrested.
Arrested, yep.
And then we get to see him in jail for like three scenes, and it's just like,
Yeah, I go through this whole thing of him getting out of jail. Like, he never even needed to be arrested in the first place.
No.
But that gag where he's in jail and everybody else is staying on the other side of the cell because he's covered in garbage and smells terrible, that was pretty funny.
Oh, that's why. Okay.
Yeah. Still, he was French.
But yeah, the scene where he's calling someone to try and get bail money,
Yeah, he's calling his lawyer. Yeah. Was never shown before this scene, you know.
Yeah.
It's not necessary. Like, the whole point is just a convenience to get Harry back to the house.
Right.
Yep. Which didn't need to be there.
Yeah. Like,
could have just been, oh, we found him and takes him home.
Yeah, this is where they could have saved a half hour movie.
Yeah, which also, just to backtrack a little bit, when they find Rambo and everybody hang out in that pile in this alley, like, is this, like, suddenly a post-apocalyptic part of the town? Like, what was going on there? No, all these abandoned vehicles.
Seattle is weird.
Fair enough.
I've all been there, so I can't.
Because my other thought is, originally when he called the police, and it was basically trying to threaten him out to, you know, to stop dicking around with the police, he said that if you say this is in fact a Bigfoot sighting, we need to evacuate you and all your neighbors and close off the area and it becomes a war zone. Is that what's actually happening in the rest of the city?
Yeah, at that point, yeah. Because they were going through and, like, arresting people with guns and stuff.
Yeah.
That's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, it was pretty much martial law.
Yeah.
So, yeah, at this point, we have Harry back in the house, and with all the sighting, the old Don Amici shows up at the house with flowers.
Yep.
Don Amici saw him on the news.
Oh, saw him on the news, right. Yeah, on the news.
I think at this point he's put together that George knows something.
Yeah.
So
we did skip over the scene where he met Don Amici earlier in the film, and
yeah,
Don Amici didn't believe him that he saw Bigfoot.
Yeah, gives him his number.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you should put in your notes.
I realized I had to
be maybe it should have had some sort of bearing on our memory.
You never know. Yeah, you never know.
Yeah, usually
he already has, because it could turn on you.
It's on him. It really doesn't, like, add anything. So whatever. It's inconsequential. Don Amici shows up.
Yeah, calls Don Amici calls. They set up a dinner. They somehow keep Harry super quiet and in a back room somehow somewhere.
They put kitten mittens on him.
That would explain a lot.
Don Amici's just old as fuck. He can't hear.
That's true. He really can't hear.
But they're having a nice dinner. He says the roast smells great, but I guess it got buried in the backyard because, despite again Kittman's, Mary was able to get around the house, get the roast, take it out back, and bury it all while being unseen, unheard.
This is a Sasquatch. You know how long it took people to find one? Like,
not when it was in the next room.
Yeah. Do the Finding Bigfoot crew, like, use this as research?
They probably should.
Oh, we missed the gag where they gave him a bath.
Oh yeah,
in the neighbor's pool, and that neighbor's pool is gross.
Gross.
And her husband's explanation for how it got so dirty is that a condor flew over and took a shit.
Yeah. Oh, man. Right. But so, during this dinner, Don Amici's trying to warn George that he shouldn't waste his life chasing Bigfoot, because it will just ruin him. But sure enough, and that Bigfoots don't exist, but sure enough, he's shown up because there's a Bigfoot standing behind him, and he gets to meet Harry.
Not even behind him, it's like standing in front of him at that point.
Mm. Yeah, well, yeah, Harry's at that point he's like right next to him.
All up in his grill.
Yeah, at that point, you would be able to smell his presence.
Yeah.
Bath or no bath.
Although, again, in me pointing out the not fixing your house, he makes a comment about if Sasquatch existed and he was in your house, do you know what your house would look like or what kind of damage it would cause? And while he's saying this, I'm noticing the giant hole in the wall in the background and the archways that Harry pushed up to get his giant head through.
Mm-hmm. Basically covered with paintings. Mm-hmm. So, at this point, they're all going to, well, they have a sleepover. A lovely sleepover, all together.
Yeah, Don Amici says he knows a good place they could take Harry where he won't be found. But they can't go till the morning or something, so they have the sleepover, which, of course, Don Amici is totally ready for with his sleeping bag.
Yeah, he's got a sleeping bag, man. He's a Boy Scout. Mm-hmm. Be prepared.
Though, again, not sure what happened, because Harry set up some branches to sleep on.
Mm-hmm.
Don Amici puts a sleeping bag next to him, yet in the cut away, it suddenly becomes a little boy cozing up with him.
Well, they're all there. They're all just piled on.
It's a cuddle puddle. It's their last night with Harry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they all want to be as close to him and his ticks as possible. So they're all piling up in the car to get to the forest.
Well, they notice LaFleur is snooping around.
Yeah,
the neighbor brandishes an electric carving knife at him.
Yeah. Well, this all comes about because Harry makes a final move on the daughter by removing all the roses from the neighbor's yard.
All the roses. Cue the soft music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bring them to the daughter in the morning.
Joe Cocker.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
And boy, does he make a move on her.
Sure it does.
Yeah, with his patented hello of, I'm going to shove your head into the ground.
Literally just palms her face and just throws her down.
Yep.
Yeah, so, like, if her bed was not there to stop her, I think her feet would have, like, gone up where her head was. He pushed her that hard.
Oh, it is proven later when he does the same thing to the hunter.
Yes.
Little Sarah's head over heels for our Harry.
But, so when the neighbor notices the roses missing, she looks out the window, sees the hunter following the trail of roses, assumes it's him.
He's holding roses for some reason.
Well, I believe the intent was Harry left a trail of them that the hunter is following, so he found the rose and picked it up. Yeah, so the neighbor comes at him with the electric carving knife.
Yeah. But so how do they escape?
They just go out the back door.
Yep. All right. That's it.
There's just nothing to it.
They slash
his tires.
They slash LaFleur's tires.
Pile in Don Amici's van.
Yep. And Harry makes siren noises.
When they're going, LaFleur steals their station wagon.
Right.
So they're on the highway to traffic.
Right.
And the traffic stops them off from going. A cop comes through with the sirens, and the car's parked. The cop can get through in a really orderly fashion, which doesn't happen.
No, not at all.
So when the traffic gets back going, Harry starts screaming the way the cop was, and then all the cars part again, and that's how they get past traffic.
Okay. I was in the bathroom.
That's fair. God. I was thinking about the bathroom during that part.
That's awesome. And most of the smoke.
I was thinking about questioning the fact that that's clearly not a police siren, but then I realized there's a fucking Sasquatch sticking its head out the window yelling. Yeah. I would get out of the way of that car.
Yeah.
That's true.
That's probably not going to stop.
Yeah.
So they end up in the mountains.
In Mount Rainier.
Mount Rainier, where cherries come from. And then they're trying to get Harry to leave. They have the Lassie scene. Yeah.
A scene that's been hilariously redone many times since.
Yep, get away. I hate you. Mm-hmm. You suck, you smell. Get a job.
And a good old backhand.
Yeah, gotta punch him.
John Lithgow backhands a Sasquatch.
it's all okay. It's open palm.
Gives him five to the mouth.
Yep, because LaFleur is coming up the mountainside.
My fingers say the face.
Yes.
LaFleur is coming up the mountainside, and even though they outnumber him 4-1.
About that?
Yeah, 4-1, not including the kids.
And they're all bigger than he is, except
all
the kids.
They're all bigger than he is.
Well, he had a hunting rifle.
Yeah, but
he's not shooting them.
It's a long range. It's a long range rifle. You gotta swing it in.
I'm pretty sure if he shows up and pulls that gun, if you're standing around Harry and just say, like, don't shoot him, you'd probably talk the guy down. I don't think it would have been that difficult.
Or just hit him with a rock.
Hit him with a rock.
So Harry escapes into the trees.
Mm-hmm. But they realize, because there's snow everywhere up in Mount Rainier, that it'll be easy to track. So they all put on the plaster prints that Don Amici has of Harry's footprints so they can mislead LaFleur.
Right. So,
again, kind of amounts to nothing because he immediately goes right to where Harry is. Or I believe he's following the fake prints, which still lead right to where Harry is.
Yeah, well, that's where Harry decides he has to, like, jump down to keep him away from, I believe he's going to get John Lithgow at that point.
Yeah, he's following
Lithgow. Oh, yeah, but I mean, originally they're making these fake tracks. Lithgow seems to found the path that Harry took or something, which apparently, I don't know why he didn't see those tracks, Harry's actual tracks or whatever, because Harry was right up in that tree.
It's a Sasquatch, good at hiding.
I guess. The hunter comes, follows those tracks exactly, and ends up right under where Harry's hiding, and then Harry realizes that the hunter's after them, and he's going to find Lithgow instead, so he just jumps down on him and starts a battle.
Well, there's like a little bit of a chase where LaFleur's internet is probably lagging because he just misses every shot.
Every shot. He
shoots the shit out of a bunch of trees.
Again, he's Sasquatch. Good at avoiding
Sasquatch.
But they end up face to face. Knee to groin.
That went better for LaFleur than I thought it was going to.
Sure did.
I mean, if you're dealing with a non-violent Bigfoot, like if it was Kevin Peter Hall as Predator, it would have ended completely different.
Yeah,
really, it was all just because Harry did not do anything to hurt him. If Harry had tried, it would have been terrible.
Kill me! Do it!
Watch this picture like Predator 2 where he sees, like, carrying away LaFleur's head. And
well, that's what I was hoping, because he grabs his head, like, a bunch of times in that.
Oh, but LaFleur just straight up kicks him in the jimmy.
Oh, right in the nards. He gets some right in the nads.
Good, like, gives him a good knee, just... Boom.
And as it should, that puts Harry down.
Yeah, for a moment it looks like Harry is finally pissed enough to rip his head off, but then, sure enough, that pain catches up with him and he just goes down.
Yeah, and so he takes off running, but that doesn't go too well for him.
Nope.
Here's what I don't get, they never really explain this. Alright, so he catches LaFleur, and then the whole family comes back to the station wagon, to find Harry is sitting on top of it, holding LaFleur and a dollar.
Yeah.
Where did he get the dollar? I don't know. What was he going to do with it?
No idea.
He ran it in LaFleur's pocket.
Yeah.
He's like, I bought you.
Yeah, you're mine now. Everything you own is mine.
You're my bride. This is my dowry.
He's a prison bride, so he had to pull out his pocket so he could carry it around.
So, Harry catches LaFleur. And then John Lithgow starts pummeling.
Yeah, he goes in beast mode.
Pummeling his head against the side of the car. Oh my goodness.
I would never want that to be me.
No.
It's a scary sight.
Again, you forget how scary John Lithgow could be till he's got like a 5'6" Frenchman in his hands. Ragdolling him around the car. But that's when we find that Harry is the voice of reason here and steps in and separates the two of them.
Well, he doesn't want his new bride damaged.
Yeah, he bought them for a dollar, fair and square.
So then it's bro grabs all around, pretty much.
Yeah, that's when LaFleur realizes that Harry is not a violent creature. So then Harry immediately hits him so hard that he flips over.
Yeah.
Like, straight, like, his feet are right where his head was. Basically just causing him to, like, pile drive himself.
Everyone gets their final goodbyes. It's very touching. And as Harry walks off into the forest, we see that there are several other Bigfoots just hanging around waiting for him to return.
Yeah,
basically an Ewok.
Yeah, there's an Ewok in there, too.
Yeah, which, again, I say, like, this appears to be his family, so I can only imagine that was his very angry wife, wondering where the hell he's been and why he smells like other people.
Yeah, Harry was in no hurry to get back there.
Trouble in the marriage.
He didn't want to
go.
I gotta go back to work now.
Dude's night out.
I'm out of mouth to mouth.
Oh. Well, he's coming back for it, Sarah.
He's
the flirt.
He's on vacation, a little strange. That doesn't count.
I hit him over Nancy, too, at the end.
I got a dollar.
What you got?
But yeah, so that was Harry and the Hendersons.
Well, let's...
Oh, hold on. There's a few important things we're missing.
Let's not forget the aha video.
I was getting that.
Make a little Loch Ness Monster joke and then just totally blindside you with the credits.
Yeah.
Who wants to take this one?
It's just scenes from the movie, but done in the style of the Take On Me video.
Like, straight up that same...
And it's bizarre as hell.
Yeah.
And it's playing a Joe Cocker song, like, like we're having a moment.
Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
The ball shot one is my favorite. Like, throwing your dog like a football and then kicking Harry in the nards. Some of those are great.
Most of these seem to be based around the point of, how can we end this with showing a close-up of Harry making some weird-ass face? And it was a little creepy.
Oh, it's an 80s movie, so the end credits of 80s movies just showed you the movie again.
Yeah.
Oh, I understand.
So it's like, doing that.
But it was always like, you know, you see the scene where he's on the roof of the car, and then it goes into the animation, and then he goes flying off the car, and it stops with him, like, right at the camera, screaming while he's being thrown. He gets kicked in the balls. It stops right as he's making the weird face from being kicked in the balls. Like,
ow, my balls!
Yeah.
Oh, my balls!
Yeah, that's nice. Harry and the Hendersons. Alright, so, that was Harry and the Hendersons. Final thoughts. Brian!
Final thoughts. That movie is way different than it was when I was a kid. So, yeah. I mean, it had great things in it. Like, the practical effects. The mask in it was awesome, and that kind of stuff was cool. But there was some stuff missing from the movie for me. If you have kids, I'd say go ahead and watch it, but I don't know if I'd watch it again. And I loved it as a kid, but I don't know if I'd watch it again.
All right. Rob, so is it, that's a...
I would not recommend it unless you have kids.
Okay.
Because the practical effects are cool even for a kid. Like, they hold up real well.
Yeah, I'm going to mirror that. I mean, as far as the practical effects, the effects were awesome. Like, the costume was great. The sets were good. Like, the damage to the house was all cool looking. It was all, you know, practically done. So it looked good. But this movie is like a half hour too long. So I am going to give it a recommend. Obviously... The only way to watch it is on home video at this point, so you can fast forward through all the, pretty much all everything in the middle. Like, you want to see the beginning where the Harry first shows up, and I guess you want to see the end, like the climax of the movie. But all that crap in the middle, like with the garbage truck, is just unnecessary and frankly boring. So while it's good to watch to see how movies used to be made, like there's nothing like. There was no material for us. There was nothing to talk about. It was really just like a milquetoast kind of cut and paste like family movie. So I'm going to give it a very weak recommend just to see it and then move on.
Yeah, I'm in the same camp basically. For a family film, it's fine. If you have kids, as said, you know, it'd be fine to watch and everything. Might enjoy it enough yourself. The special effects are definitely good, but if you're watching it for that, you can just find clips on YouTube. You'll be fine. Or just look up Rick Baker. He's got great stuff besides just Harry. So it's a weak recommend, but yeah, again, if you're watching by yourself or something, you're probably going to be doing a lot of fast-forwarding. And the newcomer to this movie.
Yeah, I wanted to hate this movie, because I remember just not giving a crap about it, and I don't hate this movie. It's a fundamentally solid movie, great practical effects, the actors give good performances, but there's not that much to offer in it. There's not too many memorable scenes, other than, like, that nut shot and that one, like, gag in the jail. Like, there really isn't much I take from it. I don't think I'll ever watch this again. So I really can't recommend it.
Yeah, which is not surprising, because on Rotten Tomatoes, critics gave it a 44%, and the audience gave it 54%. So I think that pretty much mirrors how the rest of us feel.
Yeah, I mean, 44 and 50, like, that's
it's middle of the road.
Where we're at. Yeah. Split right down the middle. Like,
It's a shame, because it looks like there was talent involved in it, and it's a really fundamentally sound foundation for something. Right. Like, this could have been a really memorable movie.
Yeah. It was enough to get a TV show.
But yeah. I mean, that's the thing. For the 80s, I think this was memorable enough.
But... Yeah.
But also, part of it is, like, this movie is not for us. Like, kids. And for kids, it's a perfectly good, serviceable movie. Other than the fact that they kind of use a lot of language, like, for a kid's movie.
They swear a few times.
Mm-hmm. Like, several times.
The kid swears in
the kid, right away.
Every character, like, swears, like, once at least. So it's, I mean, yeah, it's for not... that, it's, but that's the 80s, too, where it's, like, just a little bit, you know.
Again, it's very much a product of its time. It's more of an issue of how well it still holds up. And, again, while I think kids could enjoy it, and even the parents might enjoy it with them, it's not especially good or anything.
Yeah, that's the fundamental problem, is it's not good enough to engage you on its own. With the merits of its filmmaking, and it's not bad enough that you can actually sit there and poke fun at it. And
yes,
right.
Keep yourself entertained that kind way. Of it's in the middle of those two. And
so, which is why none of us had any good notes on this.
Yeah.
All right. So, up for next time.
We do this thing where we roll a d20. We have 20 movies on the list here. We pick our next one by whatever the die rolls, and to roll that die. Right. That I have right here in my hand. And a roll. 19.
19 is Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, dear.
Oh, man.
So, yeah.
Starring Sir Marlon Wayans, and Jeremy Irons.
I have not seen this movie.
And Jimmy Olsen from Superman and
Who
Lewis.
Who cares?
Exactly. So, we'll see you then. Strap in tight. It's going to be a rough one.
Little side note, the last time I saw this movie was in theater.
Wow.
So, if you'd like to get a hold of us, we are not really on any kind of social media as of this moment, but in the future, we'll be all over it. So, you can find us currently at Gmail. If you have any questions or anything for us, you can find us at the4ampodcast@gmail.com. We will eventually be on Twitter at 4ampodcast and Tumblr at 4ampodcast. And that's pretty much it.
All right.
Thanks for listening.
Bye, everybody.
Deuces.
Thanks, guys. See you next time.